The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Well, on today's show, my conversation with Mary Lynn Mathry, co-founder and executive director of Patients Out of Time.
My name is Mary Lynn Mathry, and I'm a registered nurse. I've been a registered nurse for a long time. Talking today about Patients Out of Time. It's an organization founded by Al Byrne and myself, Mary Lynn Mathry, back in 1995 to educate healthcare professionals and the public about the therapeutic use of cannabis. It took about 5 years until someone would accredit our conference because of the topic being cannabis. And we started out with every 2 years putting on a conference with international faculty, really proud of the people we've had over the years, including Raphael Mishulam and Vincenzo DiMarzo and Manuel Guzman, Christina Sanchez, Ethan Russo, Dustin Sulak, I could go on. About 2015, the science was coming in so quickly, we increased our conference series to an annual event. So coming up this June, 9 to 11, will be the 15th National Clinical Conference on Cannabis Therapeutics. It's going to be held at the Unity Temple in Kansas City, Missouri. And one of the reasons we picked Missouri this year, we actually were going to have it in St. Louis because it's St. Louis, Missouri. Back in 1988, a Lynn Howlett's lab discovered the CB1 receptors, the first receptors discovered, cannabinoid receptors in our brain, which literally led to the discovery of the whole endocannabinoid system. And a Lynn Howlett will be a guest at our conference. But in talking with folks in Missouri, we changed our mind and moved over to Kansas City, Missouri. Main reason being that Kansas needs some education. Their clinicians, sounds like especially their legislators, because there was a medical cannabis bill going forward and it did not pass. So we're here and we're hoping that we can get a lot of folks from Missouri coming to the conference. And this year, because of Lynn Howlett, literally her lab opening the door to this wonderful discovery about the endocannabinoid system, the theme for the conference will be the endocannabinoid system and beyond.
I've been looking over the schedule. It looks like an impressive lineup. I want to ask you about a couple of the, you know, just some of the highlights. Before we do, though, you have some news. What is that? Tell me about this Academy of Cannabis Education.
Cannabis is now accepted in most states, legal in many, but almost every state has some kind of medical cannabis law. So it's accepted, which is great from our perspective. And Patients Out of Time, that was one of the reasons we kept trying to convince legislators, the public, whatever, that everyone wants more research on cannabis. This is a plant with so many constituents, so many varieties of the plant. We want more research. But patients should not be forbidden from using this drug while waiting for other research. It was just ridiculous. So Patients Out of Time was really to stress the issue that these patients, many patients were very sick, whether it be suicidal, hospice patients nearing their death from whether it be cancer or whatever problem, chronic pain patients, they need relief right away. And that was what we wanted to stress. This is medicine. It really can help patients. Why keep it illegal and why prevent patients from having it? Well, so here we are today, and that name doesn't seem to fit as well. Cannabis is accepted. In fact, back when we started, people only knew to call it marijuana. And at least now people know what we mean when we say cannabis. We have literally transferred our conference series over to the Academy of Cannabis Education. So this 15th National Clinical Conference on Cannabis Therapeutics is jointly sponsored by the Academy of Cannabis Education and the University of Virginia School of Nursing and School of Medicine, their continuing ed department. So we're really thrilled about that because they've got what's called joint accreditation. And what that means is we are accredited for physicians, nurses, pharmacists, PAs. They will all get continuing education through this. So we're really happy about that because we want all disciplines to understand cannabis. So this is like the premiere of the Academy of Cannabis Education, which will carry on the series. And down the road, Patients Out of Time is going to probably focus, well, not probably, we'll focus more on education of the patients. Our conferences, by the way, everyone, are accredited for healthcare professionals to get their continuing education credits, but that doesn't mean it's only for healthcare professionals. The public's certainly invited. We would love to see legislators so they can actually have some understanding of what votes on medical cannabis or legalizing cannabis are all about and recognize the value of this plant, not only to human health, but to Earth's health. So this is open to everyone. Premiere of the Academy of Cannabis Education. If folks haven't figured that out, the acronym is ACE.
And it's not just people who can actually travel to Kansas City, Missouri. You've also got you're doing it as a hybrid, so you'll have an online access as well. And you were saying about non-physicians, non-healthcare. In fact, you're doing a luncheon for veterans one of these days, on one of the days?
Exactly. On Thursday, we have a couple of pre-conference workshops we're excited about. The first in the morning on the 9th, is a conference that's actually brought to us by the Integrative Providers Association, looking more at the integrative medicine, and cannabis is certainly a part of that. But that morning session is going to have, it's all virtual, but it'll be three presentations from a conference that took place this fall. Actually, one of the presentations is from myself on cannabis and addiction, especially with the opioid epidemic, how well cannabis can work with opiates. And then we've got Laura Logano talking about cannabis and nutrition. And then there's another talk on the plant itself. But the special thing we're going to do, so it's lunch on your own for folks on Thursday, if they come to that pre-conference workshop. But from noon to 2 o'clock, at the Brio Italian Grill, for those folks who are local, the veterans who are local, we're having a veteran luncheon at the Brio Italian Grill. And that's myself. I'm a veteran. Michael Green on our board is a veteran. Brandon Wyatt on the board of Patients Out of Time is also a veteran. But veteran issues are very close to us. Again, folks out there, we have over 22 suicides a day from veterans. And you know, it's not really from post-traumatic stress. It's not necessarily from the chronic pain or traumatic brain injuries. It's generally from the polypharmacy used to try to help the veterans. They literally are just out of their head with the drugs. And for those who don't know it, antidepressants have their place. But antidepressants also, there's a black box warning on them, and it's a black box warning on that says it may cause suicidal or homicidal ideation. You mix those pills with anxiety medications, pain medications, sleep medications. These people are literally, going crazy from the drugs they're being given. TBIs and others. So veterans issues is really big. We, when a veteran serves, they're serving their country. And unfortunately for the veterans, if they want medical cannabis, it depends on which state they live in. So a vet in Kansas is not going to be able to use cannabis. A vet in Missouri, if they get a recommendation from a physician, they can use cannabis. So it's not right. Anyway, so we have a luncheon. So this is a shout out to anyone in that area. Or if you know of any veteran in the Kansas City, Missouri area, Kansas, one of the surrounding states, by all means, let them know. And before I go any further, then, if people want more information, patientoftime.com, is the website. And someone could even just write to us if they have any questions about it. And we can let them know more, because we would like to know if someone's coming, just so we have room at the table for everyone. But just to continue with Thursday, there is another pre-conference workshop in the afternoon then from 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock. And this is really designed for those who really know nothing about cannabis. It's Cannabis 101. And we're just thrilled, thrilled to have Dustin Sulek, a DO, and Deborah Malka, PhD, MD, presenting your basic information about the endocannabinoid system in cannabis. And then Cynthia Northcutt, who is a nurse and a JD, is going to talk about the legal ramifications as it relates to cannabis and medicine in Missouri. It's always good to know the laws. They vary from state to state, which is a huge problem for patients.
This is my conversation with Mary Lynn Mathery, co-founder and executive director of Patients Out of Time. We'll have more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. You got a session on psychedelics and the endocannabinoid system. Am I wrong, or is this a first for Patients Out of Time to be talking about psychedelics at the cannabis conference?
Actually, yes, it is. And that's where, and beyond. So I'll back up just a little bit. The morning is going to start out talking more about the evolution of the endocannabinoid system and the nuts and bolts of the endocannabinoid system. And you mentioned Greg Gerdeman, right? He's a PhD and he was a biology professor at the university in Florida and no longer there, but he's got a great teaching background. He is just excellent in explaining all of this, and he really understands the endocannabinoid system. So that's really, it is, for me, it's the key to everything. Understanding this endocannabinoid system, and again, for anyone out there listening, if they've not heard of it or don't know about it, literally we've got this molecular signaling system throughout our body, those receptors being few and far between in our brainstem, which helps explain why we aren't overdosing on cannabis. But this is a molecular signaling system that is literally keeping us in balance. It's these receptors are throughout our body. We make cannabinoids, and this communication is vital to keeping us healthy. It also helps explain why why people use cannabis for so many different things. That's not typical of any other medication. But anyway, so you're going to get an understanding of that, and talking about what kind of other influences are there on the endocannabinoid system besides cannabis. Your diet will influence that. And there are other things. And that's where Dustin Sulek will come in. Ethan Russo is going to be talking about plants and the ECS. There are other plants out there that interact with the endocannabinoid system. So it's good that people understand that. You know, I know there's been such a fear. We see it still today. It's been since the mid-1990s when we understood the endocannabinoid system. And here we are today, 2022, it's still not taught in most nursing schools or medical schools. And this system is so important. Like I said, not just the fact that it's keeping us in balance and so many things influence it, we really need to understand it. But yeah, so here's cannabis and psychedelics. Isn't that interesting? But there is a tie. We're finding out, the healing power of so many psychedelics, whether, it be your psilocybin mushrooms, ayahuasca, so many other different plants, ibogaine, can really be helpful. And frankly, there's a book out on cannabis, using it as a psychedelic, literally helping people work through trauma issues or other issues with that influence on your mind. Now, a lot of this is clearly to be in the healing process, having a therapist who guides people through it. So we just wanted to, again, kind of expand people's understanding. The more we understand the endocannabinoid system and cannabis's interaction, the more you understand how vital it is to health. And psychedelics are, hallelujah, they're becoming known. And there you are in Oregon, Doug, where they've acknowledged the fact that psychedelics can be healing and passed some legislation in favor of that. And then we've got a Connie McLaughlin-Miley, a PharmD, to literally talk about the pharmacology of cannabis. I think what's interesting, I'll be good and not mention the university, but there was a statement by the dean of a school of medicine, basically not allowing any continuing education on cannabis, their own continuing education department, to do anything on cannabis until there was more research. And I'm thinking, has this person been in a cave or something? So people, there's a lot of research out there, and we want to make sure people understand, and we really are understanding the pharmacology of it pretty well. So I think this is really good, and it's going to be really good for the pharmacists out there to get a good understanding of this plant. And we want to talk a little bit about its cannabis and COVID. Just what do we know about cannabis and its effect on the endocannabinoid system, and how does this affect COVID? I think that's a big issue for a lot of people. And that's going to be presented by Michelle Sexton, an MD. She's been working with cannabis for a number of years. So that full day is a lot of science that's going to be going at people, but good science.
And as you mentioned, it's an accredited conference. So there's that does set it apart from a lot of the different, I mean, they're weed conferences, forgive me, but weed conferences are a dime a dozen these days. They're everybody in their butt, but most of them are focused on the business aspect, the view that, even a few that call them, that say they're talking about science, and not really accredited, and really it's more of an industry promotion thing. Although you'll have people talking science in there too. Yay. But you've actually done, I mean, that's the, every one of these conferences you've done has been accredited for continuing education for healthcare professionals. I mean, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
You're remembering that correctly. And that was the goal of, actually, we were, you know, on the board of NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, prior to that. And it was just really evident that the healthcare professionals were not going to touch that. That was just too big of a leap. And yet, understanding that there were federal patients at that time, the federal government had its investigational new drug program where patients could access it. It was a program they did not want to advertise. In fact, when people started finding out about it, by 1992, they shut the program down. But it was through that and some early work I did on my, when I went back to graduate school, I did my thesis on marijuana disclosure to healthcare professionals. And this was after I was nursing for a while, so it dates me because I was back in grad school in the mid-80s. So 1984, doesn't that sound great? But my thesis was on marijuana disclosure, and I went through NORML to get a sample. 1984, it was just say no time, and nobody was going to admit to using cannabis. So I thought, maybe I can go through NORML. And I got a good response, and it was through that, my last question on it. And by the way, the survey, marijuana disclosure, I can tell you that most were never asked by a healthcare professional about their use. But about half said that they would admit to use because they thought the healthcare professional should be aware of it. And I heartily agree. It's very good to know what people are consuming in their body if you're going to be taking care of them. But anyway, the last question asked about their health concerns. And the participants could check any of boxes that I had some thoughts already there. Could be worried about the effects on their brain, on their heart, on their lungs, on their kidneys. Could it be addictive? What would happen for pregnant women, its effect on their fetus? And then I put in other, and people started writing in. Someone responded that they were a spinal cord injury patient and used it for multiple sclerosis. Someone wrote in a woman during pregnancy used it for morning sickness. Some people said glaucoma. I remember certainly somebody said it for chemotherapy, and that was what I was aware of. I knew that marijuana was used for chemotherapy. Well, when I'm hearing it, reading this other stuff, I'm going, wow, these people are using it for all these different things. So I did my research and started looking up to find out cannabis is the proper name for the plant. And cannabis was used as medicine in the United States prior to the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937. You know, it was a very popular medicine. And it's like, wow, why did it become illegal? And then you find out that the Marijuana Tax Act had nothing to do with the safety or dangers of cannabis. It was just, you know, a little bit of Reefer Madness going around, you know, that it made you crazy. And it was a racial piece in there, but a lot of it was monetary. Other people wanting hemp for other reasons, the pharmaceutical industry not wanting that medicine. You know, that's pretty sad, the lies we've been told all these years. But, you know, that was it. We needed to break the silence. And so we broke away from normal after that, because I thought if healthcare professionals understood cannabis in a dose-related, you know, based on research and given the proper dose, they would recognize the safety of it. You know, the tests up until that time, we were hearing about, it damaged, you know, it would total your immune system. Well, the little rats or mice they were doing the studies on, they were giving them ridiculously high doses. And if you remember, they tell you, it's going to cause brain damage. And they were basing that on a study of monkeys. The poor little guys were masks on their faces and could only breathe cannabis smoke, no oxygen. So of course their brains suffered from that. So by focusing on medical cannabis and the research behind it, and having accredited conferences, and by that, there are strict regulations, as you were alluding to, Doug. It's not an expo where people are just coming, you know, trying to get people to know in the industry and sell products, et cetera. This is accredited, meaning it's got to meet criteria. You've got to have real science that you're presenting. And that's what we wanted to do. And that is what we do. It's real science on this plant, and healthcare professionals, one, they need continuing education credits to maintain their practice in most states. And many specialties require continuing education, you know, to stay up to date with medicine. But two, that they know it's a good source of medicine, of information if it's accredited. So, and folks out there, that's sometimes people look and they think it's a bit expensive, but we're paying for that. And we cannot get sponsorship, so to speak, directly from the industry. For those of you out there, again, Big Pharma has been doing that to healthcare professionals for many, many years, you know, really trying to influence them to buy their drug. They'll offer to pay for the studies. They might even write the study up for you. And you can tell that it's probably quite biased. So there's a lot of guidelines and regulations to make sure that the science is not biased to some kind of industry thing. So it means it's good science, but it also means it's expensive because of those restrictions.
This is my conversation with Mary Lynn Mathery, co-founder and executive director of Patients Out of Time. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. I suppose you can say it. There are going to be a few things we'll agree to disagree on. Like the opioid crisis, I'd characterize an overdose crisis. Really a toxic drug supply and overdose crisis. And you're talking scientifically, so cannabis is the right thing to say. I wonder whether an 18th century Swedish naturalist is the person who I should be listening to when it comes to telling me what I should call my drugs as I sip my cup of Camellia sinensis. Oh, sorry, I used the slang word tea. Anyway, but you're talking science, so actually he would want to talk about cannabis and cannabinoids. That's kind of the point. Science is kind of the point. But there's no question, though, that weed, cannabis, marijuana, whatever we call it, actually can be used in conjunction with things like, whether it's treating things like anxiety or pain or depression and such. And on Saturday, you've got a couple of folks, in fact, talking about presentation on Saturday about cannabis and opioid use. You've done a lot. And so, as I mentioned earlier, I forget sometimes that you were also a certified addictions nurse, and you worked for many years doing substance use disorder treatment. So your understanding of all that is, you know, very much first. You're very much trained in that, and a great deal of firsthand experience. Tell me about some of the stuff you got on Saturday, especially, like I say, the cannabis and opioid use, and some of these other things you're talking.
So Saturday we get more clinical for folks, you know, research first, and then how do you apply that? So we're going to actually have Marion McNabb has done a survey of healthcare professionals, literally asking them their knowledge about it, their attitude towards cannabis. So she's going to be presenting her findings there. So you kind of get a picture of how, what this looks like across the United States. And then we're going to have a panel of healthcare professionals, two physicians and an RN, talking about their challenges of working with cannabis in the real world. How do you practice this? Dustin Sulek will talk on dosing, proper dosing. Dr. Deb Malka, she's going to be talking, you know, just kind of generalities, but to help clinicians understand, you know, this is a great approach for children, for different age populations. And what about, you know, the adults, for, you know, children, adults, babies, but then getting into old age and the elderly, which is hugely important there. And I think, again, people can understand this is where the endocannabinoid system comes in. As we get older, a lot of our organs don't work as well. And same with the molecular signaling system. So how can we boost it? But you can expect more trouble staying in balance the older you get. We'll be talking about that. And Jehan Marcoux talks about the cannabis and cannabinoid safety. You know, this is coming out there. CBD is available all over. Are people making the products safely? Are they labeling them correctly? What should someone look out for? How can we help guide patients to the appropriate products? Then we're going to have a patient panel. We always like to include patients in our conferences because, you know, it's a basic thing. The patient is the best source of information when you're trying to take care of a patient. So it really is important that we hear from them. And a lot of it is just learning the struggles they've been through in trying to take care of a various healthcare problem, some kind of condition, some kind of disease, whatever it is. And then to find that cannabis was working better than the pharmaceuticals, so much safer, feeling more like themselves. So it's always good to hear from the patients. So we'll get that. Brian Crum, we've had Brian with us several times. He's a nurse practitioner from New Mexico, also a veteran. He's really taken care of a lot of folks with post-traumatic stress symptoms and other issues, but he's going to talk about cannabis and mental health. Got Dr. Bridget Williams coming from the Chicago area, talking about cannabis and opioid use. Again, for folks to understand, opiates have their place. You know, you have surgery, you're going to want something very strong to take care of the pain. But for folks with chronic pain and a lot of pain, the cannabis using with opiates is synergistic. So it just makes it, you don't need as much of the opiate. And for some patients with long-term chronic pain, they don't need the opiates at all. Cannabis works much better. So it's we've got a, you know, epidemic of overdoses from these pills. And a lot of times they start with pharmaceuticals for pain management, and it escalates out of control.
Well, that was my conversation with Mary Lynn Mathry, co-founder and executive director of Patients Out of Time. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Find this edition of Century along with an archive of past shows at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.